Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special four-pack. Now, you get 40% off two MyPillow premiums and two go-anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special four-pack offer. You get two MyPillow premium pillows and two go-anywhere pillows for 40% off, and that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow. All right, happy Friday. Glad you made it with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. It's 800-941-SEAN. Well, the latest on DACA, we'll check in with Mercedes Schlapp. Will the president insist on funding the border wall? He's now said it a ton of times, and it's an important issue. We're also monitoring a situation that is now going on in St. Louis. As we speak, crowds of demonstrators are marching in St. Louis, following the acquittal of a white former police officer charged with murder last year for fatally shooting a black driver after a car chase, accused by protesters of planting the gun on the victim. You know, one of the things I saw today in New York, there was an incident where a number of cops, there was somebody that was obviously mentally ill, just stood in one position for 45 minutes. It's the first, what do you call that, GoPro moment for the New York City police. Anyway, the whole thing was on tape, went on for nearly 50 minutes, and they were begging this guy, please don't let us shoot you. He was holding a knife in his left hand, and he was holding his right hand behind his back. You didn't know what was in his hand. And then a neighbor came in and said, here, I'm calling your cousin or a friend, and please listen to them. The cop kept saying, please, we don't want to shoot you. Please drop the weapon. Drop the weapon. What's behind your back? Why won't you move? 45 minutes. The guy didn't budge. He ended up getting shot. Anyway, the prosecutors charged the police officer in the St. Louis case with murdering Anthony Lamar Smith. This goes all the way back to December 2011. According to the probable cause statement, Stockley was caught saying that he was going to kill this blankety blankety blank. Don't you know it? And heard telling another officer to drive into Smith's slowing car. The court document submitted by the St. Louis circuit attorney said Stockley then approached Smith's widow and fired five times into the car, hitting Smith with each shot and killing him. And in addition, prosecutors say that there was a gun found in Smith's car, but it was later determined to only have DNA from Stockley. So obviously people upset about that. We're also today, sadly, monitoring once again more terrorist attacks. It's like it never ends here. We can never get a break. And once again, this is back in, we got the subway system, what they call the tube in Great Britain, and there's now, I think it's up to 22 people now. It was during rush hour where a lot of kids, there was one image of a kid that literally had the skin burned off him, and they left a device with a timer inside of what is their equivalent of a subway, and it's being viewed as a terrorist attack. The odd thing is President Trump recognized immediately it was a terrorist attack. He didn't say radical Islamic terror that I saw anywhere. And Theresa May, the prime minister, is criticizing Trump over the unhelpful tweet. Well, what is it? How does somebody bring a detonated homemade bomb on a train and it goes off and innocent people are injured and we're not supposed to think it's terror? He didn't say who. He said it's terror. That's terror. I heard a boom. There were flames, a witness said, almost immediately thereafter. And it was in a pretty crowded subway or tube at the time of rush hour, so a very difficult situation there. We're also following today a situation that's going on, some of the elections going on. Judge Roy Moore is running for the Senate in Alabama, and Mitch McConnell, Mr. 18% approval rating, is there. And he is fighting for Luther Strange, which gives everybody a reason to vote for Judge Roy Moore. Anybody that Mitch McConnell's smearing, slandering, and trying to defeat means that that person, if they win, will be Mitch McConnell's person. In that case, it would be Luther Strange. So we're following all of this today, and if anything happens in St. Louis, we'll be monitoring throughout the day today. We also have the situation again with North Korea. You know, remember going back to The Sound of Music, what do you do about a lunatic by the name of Kim Jong-un? I couldn't believe what I was hearing last night. Hillary Clinton apparently was on MSNBC and says, you need to know what you're doing with North Korea. You really need to understand the people. You need to understand the language of North Korea. You understand people of North Korea. And I'm sitting there listening to this. Excuse me, your husband bribed North Korea and Kim Jong-un's father, Kim Jong-il, with billions of dollars and assured the American people this was a good deal for them. It didn't turn out to be such a good deal. And we can predict with a pretty high degree of certainty that the Iranian deal is not going to turn out to be a good deal. Nikki Haley was speaking today, and what she said is North Korea's sanctions are not working, and the next step is up to General Mattis. Lindsey Graham is also out there, and he's saying that, in fact, it's time to threaten military action against North Korea. Well, it's easy to threaten. You can threaten all you want. It's a matter of whether or not we're going to step into this minefield. And I am telling anybody that's thinking military options in this, you better be careful because there's no good option here. By the way, before I go any further, I want to welcome back News Radio WDBO in Orlando. They have been on local coverage now for a while, covering the aftermath of Hurricane Irma. We've missed you guys. We've been thinking about y'all and praying for you in the entire state of Florida. And we're glad we were back up and running in one of my original stations here on the Sean Hannity Show. And we hope you and your families are doing well. I know Orlando did not get hit as hard as at one point it was being projected to go right through the middle of the state. And I know people from both coasts that actually ended up in Orlando because there's so many different hotels available in Orlando. Anyway, so Lindsey Graham tweeted on this morning that, quote, clearly North Korea does not give a damn about UN sanctions or tough talk. He said it's time to more forcefully back up our diplomatic efforts with the threat of credible military action and options. All right. There's one thing that I think we need to do militarily, but you better be ready for the consequences. The one thing is we don't know, now that we know that Kim Jong-un has nuclear weapons. Now that we know he has the ability to fly one missile after another right over Japan. Now, this is China's problem far more than it is ours. China ought to be exerting all the power and influence they have in the region. And the best thing they can do is economically, they could just cut off North Korea. They have tremendous sway with the North Koreans just economically. So they're going to have to make a decision here as well. Russia should make a decision. The Japanese are now thinking about rearming. And I can't blame them. How many times are you going to let somebody fire a missile over your entire country? And I don't doubt that Guam is probably in the sights of Kim Jong-un. And when that happens, I don't think any option is going to be off the table at that point. Anyway, so North Korea, what Lindsey Graham says, believes there's no downside pushing the envelope regarding their missile and nuclear programs. And it's time for Trump and the world to make North Korea believe otherwise. There's really only one way to do this. And that is the next time they fire a missile, we better be ready to take it out of the air. Now, the only reason I can think we might not be doing it is because we're probably deploying what they have in Israel and their missile defense systems. We have the THAAD anti-missile defense system, and we're probably in the early stages of other systems. By the way, I'm looking in St. Louis now. It doesn't look good. Crowds gathering in light of this verdict in this case involving a police officer and a killing that took place back in 2011. Anyway, if you really want to do something with North Korea, probably the next step is they fire a missile and you take it out of the air, or they put it on the launch pad, you take it off the launch pad. But you got to be ready for the consequences, too. And the consequences, who knows, when you're dealing with somebody that is that unhinged, that has no desire to get along with the rest of the world. And that's why I'm not taking any lectures from the likes of Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton. If you want to go back in time, Bill Clinton, when he made this deal, remember, he gave them billions and billions of dollars and promised the world they're not going to give. They're not going to have nuclear weapons or develop nuclear weapons.
Before I take your questions, I'd like to say just a word about the framework with North Korea that Ambassador Gallucci signed this morning. This is a good deal for the United States. North Korea will freeze and then dismantle its nuclear program. South Korea and our other allies will be better protected. The entire world will be safer as we slow the spread of nuclear weapons. South Korea, with support from Japan and other nations, will bear most of the cost of providing North Korea with fuel to make up for the nuclear energy it is losing. And they will pay for an alternative power system for North Korea that will allow them to produce electricity while making it much harder for them to produce nuclear weapons. The United States and international inspectors will carefully monitor North Korea to make sure it keeps its commitments. Only as it does so will North Korea fully join the community of nations.
All right, and Rex Tillerson said the latest missile test shows that North Korea threatens the entire world. Well, we all know that. Now, let's say we decide. He goes on to say that in East Asia, an increasingly aggressive, isolated regime in North Korea threatens democracies in South Korea, Japan, and more importantly and more recently, has expanded those threats to the United States, endangering the entire world. And taking a tougher line than Tillerson, H.R. McMaster said the U.S. was fast running out of patience for diplomatic solutions. And we've been kicking the can down the road and we're out of road, he said. For those who have been commenting on a lack of military option, there is a military option. And he said, adding that it would not be the Trump administration's preferred choice. Well, it's not anybody's preferred choice, because if the guy does have nuclear weapons, let's say even just short range for the time being, well, that means he's going to fire them into South Korea. How many could die in Seoul? How many could die in Japan? We know he can reach Japan. And would this guy be so stupid to go scorched earth and fire at China? And who knows what happens if we have to incinerate his nuclear facilities? What's the fallout of all of that? You know, experts are now saying, this was in the Washington Post today, that North Korea's missile, which was believed to be an intermediate range missile, you know, had flown 2,300 miles in just over 17 minutes, according to South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff. The range means that Guam, which lies 2,100 miles from North Korea, is now in reach in 15 minutes. And they demonstrated they could reach Guam. So what do we do at this point? You know, is Guam the next target? He's going to try and fly one over Guam. What happens the next time, too, if he's got something on and it actually lands in Japan or lands in Guam? That's a big problem. All right, some of the other things we are following today. We'll get back to the issue that we were discussing yesterday, Republicans' pathetic weakness, inability to get things done. I have some very strong comments about the time frame under which they need to get these things done. So we'll get to that coming up in the program today. And also, the president's expected to speak at the bottom of this half hour. When he does, we'll bring that to you and all the other issues that I said we'll be getting into. 800-941-SHAWN is our toll-free telephone. Now, quick break. Right back. We'll continue busy breaking news Friday here on the Sean Hannity Show. 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number on a Friday. You want to be a part of the program. I talked to a congressman that I know last night. I'll only say this. Because you would know who it is. And I just sent a message, and he was asking what I thought about the state of things. So I sent a long answer. And I said that if let me make a distinction. I did make a distinction in the note. The House has done a much better job. There are 250 bills that the Senate hasn't even touched that were passed in the House. And Mitch McConnell's so stupid not to go to the simple majority. It's almost incompetence on his part, on the highest level. So I send this with great urgency. I said the Republican Party is now at the greatest risk in my lifetime of losing a significant part of their base. So look, I've been in radio now 30 years. I'm going to start next month my 23rd year on the Fox News channel. And I said, I can tell you the anger is justified and real and palpable. And, you know, what's the point? And what I said was there needs to be some action from the House in pushing their Senate colleagues to get their job done. Right now, the biggest obstacle to getting anything done is Mitch McConnell and John McCain. You can add him to the list. And if he would just move to a simple majority, then all of those bills that were passed in the House can be done. I know Lindsey Graham wants to move on health care. We'll get into that a little bit in the next segment. But if McConnell doesn't move in the next 14 weeks, everything, this opportunity, once in a generation opportunity, will have been squandered, because things become twice as hard. Now look at these crowds building in St. Louis. This doesn't look good to me. What do you think? You seeing this, Linda?
Yes, I am.
Anyway, this is an opportunity of a generation. It's being squandered. And everything that everybody that voted for in 2010, 2014, and 2016, it could all now be implemented and everybody would benefit politically. But I said, time's running out. The agenda is simple. I went through repeal and replace. I don't care which bill at this point. Anything that's going to move the ball forward would be helpful. You know, 7 brackets to 3, middle class tax cuts, simplification, corporate cuts, repatriation, and the death tax. All the things we talked about with Ted Cruz this week. Funding the wall is not an option. It's a must-do item. And I said, if you just do those things, include energy independence. The president's already appointed an originalist to the Supreme Court. You know, I'm so frustrated that they're not getting it done. I'm thinking, you know, this is the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. It's right in front of us. These things aren't that complicated. People's expectations are not high, Senator McConnell. And if you can't do it, you really do need to go. So maybe put somebody in power that does care and will work harder. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. At some point, probably this half hour, the president will speak at Joint Base Andrews, and we'll follow that story. We'll get to your calls, 800-941-SEAN, telling you about crowds now beginning to gather, getting larger, it seems, as the afternoon goes on out of St. Louis. There was an acquittal of a former police officer charged in the murder last year, white police officer shooting a black driver. There was a long car chase and accused by then the prosecutors of planting a gun on the victim. Prosecutors charged Jason Stockley, the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department officer, with murder for the killing of Anthony Lamar Smith. This goes all the way back to 2011. Talk about swift justice. According to the probable cause statement, Stockley was caught saying that he was going to kill this blankety blank, don't you know it, and was heard telling another officer to drive into Smith's slowing car. Court documents submitted by the St. Louis circuit attorney said Stockley then approached Smith's window, fired 5 times into the car, hitting Smith with each shot, killing him. In addition, the prosecutor said that there was a gun found in Smith's car. They didn't find any DA on it. They only had DNA from the police officer. Anyway, joining us on the ground in St. Louis as we speak, as this crowd gathers, is Kevin Jackson, Fox News contributor, author of best-selling books, and radio host in his own right. How are you?
John, good. I got to tell you, I've been here since Sunday, and I had forgotten about this case. But you can cut the tension in this city with a knife. It's absolutely, it's truly extraordinary.
It doesn't look good, Kevin. It looks a little bit too reminiscent of things we've seen in the past.
This is Ferguson revisited, and it's frontier justice. And you know, the verdict has come out, and now you know everybody. You could tell that they wanted a verdict. There were people here. I've been here since Sunday. I was at the coffee shop to grab coffee in the neighborhood every day, and there would be more and more people wearing Urban League shirts, NAACP, et cetera. So you knew the presence was here, and I was out having dinner.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with the Urban League or the NAACP being there. I mean,
there's nothing wrong with them being here, but I'm saying,
Are you saying they're from other cities and they were following the case?
Other cities. You could tell these were people that had come in from other cities, and they were at the ready to protest. And when they started earlier today during the protest, there were only about 9 people, and suddenly there's a crowd. And I anticipate by the time you air tonight on Fox, this is going to be a pretty big deal. And it's funny because you can almost tell people are just waiting to let justice come. In fact, the circuit attorney, when I say let justice happen, they want a specific type of justice. The circuit attorney made the comment, look, the judges ruled on this, but now it's time for the people to rule. It was a veiled threat. And this came from St. Louis circuit attorney, who's a black lady, essentially saying, you know, we've done our justice. Now there's another form of justice that needs to happen. So I'm telling you, they have, the people
so
who
what
are
did,
in this
so
house,
go through this again. What did the judge in the case say, or the justice say?
The judge in the case dismissed it, said that Stockley is not guilty, and he looked at it through all the different angles. He's a very he's a judge that's not just on his first trial. He's been around a long time, so he gave a complete reason as to why he did not rule against Stockley. But the circuit attorney came out and said, look, the judge's rule is done, but now the people need to make up their minds. Instead of saying, look, this is over, it's been adjudicated, we all need to just live with this, she actually left it in a way, and I'm sure Linda or somebody there can grab the clip, but she left it in a way that said, you can now go figure out what you want to do as the mob started to grow.
So irresponsible. So this was a case, with not a jury, but a judge.
Exactly. Yeah, this was a judge case.
So go over. Now, what about, for example, this accusation in the probable cause statement that the police officer said he was going to kill this blankety blank? Is that true?
Well, if you see the video, it's really telling. There's a video site that has it. It's actually, I think it's called Don't Kill Us or something like that. They posted and they think of it as exonerating, as actually condemning the officer. It does quite the opposite. This guy rams a police car and barely hits these cops, and then he takes off in his car, and the officers Stockley start shooting at him. Then they get in the SUV, a police SUV, and they start chasing him. And I got to tell you, if you see that police chase and you watch how Smith is driving his car, this guy, it's lucky he didn't kill somebody in traffic. It's a crazy police chase. And at the very end, he pulls over, and I can't hear him say, I'll ram you. But he did say, we need to kill this MF, is what he said. But he came back later. Stockley said, in saying that, it was taken out of context. You know, because he's in a high-speed chase. And obviously, Sean, he knows he's being recorded. Anyway, they ram the car. They get out, he and a partner. And there's some things that you can't see off camera because the police cam doesn't give you the angle. But you don't know what's happening there. So for somebody to say, he didn't have a car, he didn't reach or whatever, it's kind of ridiculous. He'd already tried to hit these police officers. I'm telling you, he almost hit two or three cars on the way on the chase. And then we're supposed to just think he's a good guy. Here, Sean, this is another one of these scenarios where all this guy had to do was surrender. And we're not even talking about this. But now we've got to adjudicate the cop because he wanted to protect himself and also protect citizens. Now, I don't know what the outcome was. I didn't look at the information. The judge obviously did, and he said he's free. But it's not that we can live with that. That's the sad part.
Well, I mean, with all that we have seen, happen in Ferguson and in Baltimore and elsewhere around the country, you see these crowds beginning to gather, and then you start thinking, oh, great, it's a night. I don't know what the weather's like. I mean, you're just thinking the worst case scenario here. And one of the things that happens after all these cases, we never go back and find those people that are committing crimes, attacking officers or businesses. There's no consequences when people are involved in these, when they go out and want to do, quote, their own justice, et cetera.
Well, there is a consequence in this one. And here's what's sad about what you're talking about. Schools were closed today. People left downtown, business people. I'm here on business. People left downtown. It is a ghost town. I heard a lady contacted me and said, Kevin, we cleared out all our employees. It's a veritable ghost town down there. Businesses have boarded up like a hurricane's hitting. It looks like Florida in some of these businesses. But here's the long range. Amazon was theoretically, and I don't know if this is exactly true, I've heard some people talking about it, we're looking at where they're going to put this new facility with 50,000 people. And here in St. Louis, they're talking about the city readying itself to hopefully woo Amazon here. Sean, let me tell you something. Amazon is not that stupid. They're not going to come to a city where every time somebody is killed, in this particular case, a criminal, a drug dealer who almost killed other people in a high-speed police chase and tried to run over police officers, and there are black people picketing on his behalf. There's no way you're going to put your big 50,000-person company in the midst of this nonsense. We have lost I don't know how many conventions in St. Louis. The city has shrunk from 1950, Sean, being 850,000 people to 318,000 in the year 2017. That should tell you the direction, the death spiral that the city is in, and yet they continue the nonsense.
Well, all right. Well, Kevin Jackson, we'll be watching and monitoring, and I'm just hoping and praying for the city of St. Louis that people, they can march all they want, they can protest all they want. I just hope for everybody's sake and the city's sake that they do it peacefully. All right, my friend, thank you for being with us, and we may have you on the TV show tonight, depending on how this unfolds, and I hope it doesn't unfold. That's my hope. All right, 800-941-SEAN is our number. You want to be a part of the program. Let's go to Rhonda is in Mississippi. Rhonda, hi. Happy Friday. Glad you're with us, Sean Hannity Show.
Thanks so much, Sean. I just wanted to call because, you know, everybody keeps saying that the president's base is angry and frustrated with him. It's not him we're angry and frustrated with. We're angry and frustrated with the GOP and Congress because they won't get anything done.
Well, yeah, I mean, honestly, 100%. Here's something I can say with 100% certainty. The meeting that this week with, well, both meetings with Schumer and Pelosi, the dinner, and then the meeting with a bipartisan group of people never would have happened if one thing happened. And that would have been all they needed to do is do their job and repeal and replace Obamacare. And they could have moved forward. They've had 9 months now. They could have moved forward with his economic plan, and they could have moved forward with the rest of his agenda and fund the wall. They could have been all finished now. They could have had everything done, and they still can get everything done. And maybe I'm naive and holding out some hope, but I think as each day passes, my optimism decreases and my frustration grows.
What they need to understand is that the president's base is there to stay. We're not all registered Republicans. Some of us are independents. Some of us are Democrat flips. And we are behind him 100%. And there is a grassroots movement right now to primary every single one of them, if that's what it takes for us to give him a Congress that will get his agenda done.
I can't tell you how many people are telling me this. It's so frustrating. Later on, we have Roy Moore on the program. You know why I'm going to support Roy Moore? Because he's being targeted by Mitch McConnell. And I really believe he's somebody that's going to be willing to stand apart. He has his whole life and career. And I just want to make sure that he supports the agenda that is the conservative agenda that will get people back to work and keep the country safe. Peace, prosperity. It's not that complicated. Not that difficult. All right, 800-941-SEAN, our number. You want to be a part of the program. Where am I going here, Linda? Let's see. Amy in Kansas. Amy, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you. Is this Sean?
Yes, ma'am. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. Hey, I just wanted to tell you that I have a daughter who works in St. Louis. I'm calling from Kansas. And she was told to they were told to leave and to be out of there by 3:00. Now, does that sound kind of pre-planned or what? And anyway, she left.
I didn't know kids were let off of school today. I didn't know that part.
Yeah, well, this is a full-time job, and she was down in the business district. I don't know exactly what that's called, but it's the main business area down there. And she said it was about, I think, a block or two where people were starting to congregate. And so, what all you've talked about with Black Lives Matter and stuff like that, it seems kind of odd that they told them to be out of there.
Antifa, yeah.
Well,
I'll tell you what they ought to do and they're not going to do. Right now, the St. Louis police, they need to cordon off the area and they need to contain it and they need to put a curfew in place because that's what's going to happen at the end anyway if this keeps growing. They need to take proactive measures and have a strong police presence so that innocent people aren't hurt here and there's no damage and, you know, there's nothing like what we saw in Ferguson or any of these other places. They've got to take proactive measures to keep communities safe, to keep businesses safe. And we cannot allow people not liking verdicts to disrupt the way we have seen in the past. Proactive action needs to be taken.
Exactly. And, I mean, you're talking about business people that are there to work and do their job, and they've had to be cleared out. And she, like I say, she left the city. Because there's no use sticking around.
Listen, I hope what I'm seeing emerge here. I hope I'm wrong. It doesn't look good, though. Anyway, thank you, Amy. Hope your daughter's well. And Bill in New Jersey, hi, how are you?
All right, how are you doing, Sean?
I'm good, sir. What's happening?
Good, good. You know, I was talking about the topic you had yesterday. I think you were going originally with your gut when you were saying when you heard that word, ultimately, we will get the wall. I think you should go with your gut versus your heart in this case, because when you think about it, the president did have an opportunity when the first budget that he signed came out to put there and just demand, I'm not signing any budget unless there's money in there for the wall. He didn't do it. And the second time with the second agreement, you know, three-month agreement with...
Well, I don't think I could be any stronger in my words, because and when he says three separate times, if we don't have the wall, we're doing nothing. And I just, you know, at that point, I will, and I said it last night on the program, I said it yesterday on the program, I'll say it now. If the president doesn't get the funding up front, he can kiss it goodbye, because they'll stab him in the back and they'll never give it to him.
Well, that's the thing too, Sean. You know, you're talking about Pelosi and Schumer. Now, he also mentioned the president when he was running, he wants to drain the swamp. Who are the two biggest alligators in that swamp?
Pelosi and Schumer.
Come on.
And McConnell.
Yeah, you got it. So you start playing with them, and that's what really worries me. And as far as the forgotten man, I just feel like we should not be so nervous about this or gut-wrenched about this. The president has to think of those people, all those people right now that are really tied up in knots thinking, oh, my gosh, what's going to happen here? You know, it's just very, very unfair to them, too. So
Listen, if they don't get they have 13 weeks now. They don't get their job done, it's going to be very ugly. Anyway, we expect the president's going to be speaking at Joint Base in Andrews and to the military. If he does, we'll follow that for you. We're still monitoring the situation out of St. Louis. We'll monitor it all tonight on Hannity, 10 Eastern. Quick break. Right back. We'll continue. All right. Any minute now, we expect the president will be speaking to the military at Joint Base Andrews. We'll cover that for you, expecting it in the next half hour. It's about a half hour late as we speak now. Also monitoring the situation, crowds gathering in St. Louis after the acquittal of a police officer there. We'll tell you more about that case as we go through the program today. Also, and I'll look at some of the political races around the country. Judge Roy Moore is in the lead in the Senate in Alabama, running against Luther Strange. He'll join us. Bo Dietl wants to be mayor of New York. He'll check in with us. And a terror attack in London on their subway known as the Tube. Katie Hopkins, Raheem Kassam also join us. Raheem Kahim is joining us straight ahead. All right, the president has arrived. Joint Base Andrews, and is introduced by Melania Trump as he speaks to the military there. We'll take it in full from the top.
Good afternoon. I want to thank the brave men and women who wear the noble uniform of the U.S. Air Force for having us here today. I had the privilege to visit with some of your wonderful children at the youth center here on base. I enjoy our time together, getting to know them, and want to thank everyone who helped make this visit possible. Every child whose parent serves in our great military should be enormously proud because your mom or dad is a true American hero. In the wake of two devastating hurricanes, the world has witnessed your courage and compassion, and you have made every American proud. Americans have trust in the United States Air Force because we know you will never quit, you will never yield, and you will never fail. We know that we are free because you are brave. I know I speak on behalf of myself and my husband when I tell you we are grateful for your service. I also want to take a moment to recognize the families of those who serve. You endured the time apart, are accepted to move when new orders come in, and face the uncertainty and that came in the times of need. This kind of lifestyle requires its own kind of courage, and your sacrifices do not go unnoticed or unappreciated. Thank you. Please know that our gratitude is boundless and goes out to each and every one of you with unconditional appreciation. This administration will always stand with the men and women of the United States Air Force. And now it's my great pleasure to introduce my husband, the President of the United States, Donald Trump.
Thank you, Hannity. Fantastic. You go sit down, Hannity. Thank you very much. At ease. Please sit down. Thank you, Melania, for that wonderful introduction and for being such an incredible emissary for the American people. She's become very, very popular. I'll tell you that. We're very proud of her. Thank you. Secretary Wilson, General Goldfein, Chief Wright, General Jacobson, Colonel Tikert, I'm honored to join you on this really, really historic occasion, the 70th anniversary of the United States Air Force, the greatest Air Force on the face of this earth by far. Before we begin, I want to say that our hearts and prayers go out to the people of London who suffered a vicious terrorist attack today. I spoke with a wonderful woman, British Prime Minister Theresa May, this morning and relayed America's deepest sympathy as well as our absolute commitment to eradicating the terrorists from our planet. Radical Islamic terrorism. It will be eradicated, believe me. America and our allies will never be intimidated. We will defend our people, our nations, and our civilization from all who dare to threaten our way of life. This includes the regime of North Korea, which has once again shown its utter contempt for its neighbors and for the entire world community. After seeing your capabilities and commitment here today, I am more confident than ever that our options in addressing this threat are both effective and overwhelming. Our thoughts also remain with those recovering in the wake of Hurricanes Irma and Harvey. I visited Florida yesterday, where the American people have once again shown the world how resilient, strong, and truly united we are. We're going to help our fellow Americans put their lives, their homes, and their communities back together, because when Americans are in need, Americans pull together. And we know we can always count on the courageous members of our nation's military to be there every step of the way, just like more than 400 Air Force medical personnel who have deployed to Florida to help care for the sick and the injured. To the men and women who proudly wear the Air Force uniform, who keep our country safe, and who fill our hearts with pride, thank you for your service and devotion to America. Thank you. I am truly thrilled to join you today at this really incredible milestone, 70 years since the founding of the United States Air Force. Congratulations. We're celebrating 70 years of history, 70 years of heroes, and 70 years of victory. I also want to thank all of the amazing family members and loved ones whose sacrifices make your service possible. We love you, we appreciate you, and everything you do. Thank you. For seven decades, the United States Air Force has pushed the boundaries of science and technology, helped restore peace and stability to troubled lands, and kept Americans safe from those who threaten our very way of life. Nothing inspires more confidence in our friends or strikes more fear in the hearts of our enemies than the sight of American warplanes on the horizon. You patrol the sky, protect the homeland, and deliver American justice to anyone who dares to threaten our people. From the earliest wooden biplanes to the high-tech UAVs to the awesome power and stunning beauty of the F-35, B-2, F-22, and I saw a lot of them today, the F-15, the F-16, the F-18. I don't know which one I like the most. But our aviators have given America total dominance of the air and space, no matter where we fly. Now, when our enemies hear the F-35 engines, when they're roaring overhead, their souls will tremble and they will know the day of reckoning has arrived. That is the way it's been since 1947, when the Air Force was born, during a time of monumental change and uncertainty in the world. Unconditional victory in World War II had come at a terrible price. Millions of lives had been lost, empires had collapsed, and much of Europe laid in ruin. The threat of global communism emerged from the void, left by defeated foes, and the free nations of the world once again looked to the United States to secure the peace. It was at this crucial moment that America established the Air Force as a separate military service and a truly great military service. And from that moment, America has dominated both air and space like no other nation in history. Our air superiority is unquestioned, not merely because we have the best equipment, but because we have the best people by far. From the Berlin airlift, through the gauntlet of MiG Alley, to the skies above the jungles of Southeast Asia and the deserts of the Middle East, American airmen have proven that they have no equal in courage, capability, or commitment. You are the ones who own the sky. You are our greatest weapon of all. In the last 64 years, American ground forces have not lost a single life to an enemy airstrike. Pretty amazing. And that is truly a testament to the strategy and skill of American airmen and the essential role you play in our national defense. As Commander-in-Chief, I'm committed to keeping the United States military the best trained, best equipped, and most technologically advanced fighting force on the planet. One of my first acts as president was to direct the rebuilding of our armed forces, and rebuilding we are. Congress took an important step this year by heeding my call for a $20 billion increase in defense spending, and we're going to be doing even much more than that. But the servicemen and women who defend our nation with their lives deserve the predictable and consistent funding that will help them win quickly and win decisively. And I will tell you that the new equipment that we're ordering by the billions, by the absolute billions and billions, it's equipment like you've never even thought of before. There is nobody in the world that will have anything even close to us and what we're doing. And that's my great honor. Believe me, I said it early on and I say it again. There is nobody even close. Our armed forces have endured continuous combat for the past 26 years. Yet, despite this, the number of airmen on active duty has dropped by one-third since the 1990s, and we've cut more than half of our fighter squadrons. Terrible. That is why I am calling on Congress to end the defense sequester once and for all, and to give our military the tools, training, equipment, and resources that our brave men and women in uniform so richly deserve. And that is happening.
All right, we're going to step in this here right now to inform stations around the Sean Hannity Show Network that we will blow the local break. And if you want to take your break, go right ahead. We'll continue with our coverage.
Fulfill its duty to you and to you. Right? To you, right? We will stop delaying needed investments in our readiness, and we will renew our commitment to the patriots who keep America safe. In doing so, we will continue the proud legacy of service that each of you has inherited, a legacy built over the generations by legends like Yeager, Wagner, Rittenbacher, Boyd, Grissom, and Shriver, the heroes who broke barrier after barrier to push American farther. And they really did. They broke so many different barriers. They went farther, faster, and they always went on to victory. Like them, each of you is a living, breathing symbol of our great country, the United States of America. The characteristics that define the Air Force aviator, boldness and bravery, action and instinct, power and grace, are woven deep into the American spirit and have defined our people since our nation was founded. The legendary Air Force General Robin Olds immortalized those attributes when he said, "Fighter pilot is an attitude. It's cockiness. It's aggressiveness. It's self-cockiness, and you know that. It is confidence. It is a streak of rebelliousness." Is that true? I don't know. And I just met a lot of these folks. They're better looking than Tom Cruise, and we know they can fight better, and we know they can fly better. They better be able to. Great people. They're truly, truly competitive, but there's something else. There's a spark. There's a desire to be good, to do well in the eyes of their peers. That desire to do good, to soar past every challenger, to overcome every obstacle, and to win for your fellow citizens and the land that we love is the same desire that beats in the heart of every red-blooded American patriot. We are, and forever will be, a nation of pioneers and patriots, risk-takers and renegades, aviators and astronauts. We crave adventure and achievement, exploration and enlightenment. We carved out a home in the new world, gave birth to the modern world, and we will shape tomorrow's world with the strength and skill of American hands. Because for America, the sky is never the limit. That is why the United States Air Force will remain the most awe-inspiring flying force ever known to man. Like every part of our military, the Air Force is born from the will of our people to search, to explore, to reach new heights. It is the people's will that you reflect and their power that you project to every single corner of the globe. Earlier this year, I had the honor of speaking with a great Army Air Corps and Air Force legend, Lieutenant Colonel Dick Cole, the last surviving Doolittle Raider and a true American hero. Like those who serve today, Dick Cole was a common American who answered to the call of duty with uncommon devotion. His place in the pages of history might have seemed unlikely prior to that fateful mission. He had never seen the ocean before, boarding a ship that would take him halfway around the world. Neither he nor anyone else had ever flown a B-2 into combat from the deck of an aircraft carrier, nor had we ever seen anybody to use a parachute before bailing out thousands of feet above the Chinese mainland. But he knew what his country needed and what his duty required. And there was no barrier that could stop Colonel Cole and his fellow Raiders from accomplishing their mission. It is that spirit of daring, devotion, and duty, and love of our country that has defined the Air Force for the past 70 years and will lift each of you to new heights every day from this day forward. There is no distance too far, no speed too fast, no challenge too great, and no height too high that will keep the United States Air Force or the American people from total victory. The American people are eternally grateful. We will stand with you always and never forget. I am always on your wing. Happy 70th birthday to the United States Air Force. Happy birthday to everybody. We are so proud of you. Congratulations to each and every one of you. And thank you for keeping America proud, strong, safe, and free. Thank you. May God bless the armed forces. And may God bless the United States of America. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you. Congratulations.
All right, the president, the 70th anniversary of the Air Force, speaking at Joint Base Andrews, introduced by his wife, Melania. And anyway, so we wanted to cover that speech, obviously well received. And, you know, we'll have some more recap of that when we get back here in a second. I want to remind everybody at the bottom of this hour, we're going to be joined by Judge Roy Moore. He's leading in Alabama. And I think in part because of Senator McConnell's low approval rating of 18%. We'll get to that. We'll also get to Bo Dietl. He wants to be the mayor of New York. But first, I want to remind all of you, if you want to look your best and you have bags and puffiness under your eyes, well, our friends at Chamonix, well, they have the answer, and it's called GenuCell. And right now, they're emptying their warehouses so that if you order now, you will double your order for free. GenuCell, of course, is a natural plant stem cell treatment with advanced peptides. You know what it's like. You wake up tired, pesky bags, puffiness under your eyes. And GenuCell, they promise they're going to have immediate effect and they're going to improve the bags and puffiness. You'll see results in 12 hours or you get your money back. And if you call now, you'll double your order for free. Now, GenuCell, backed by the best customer service in the business, ironclad, no risk, 60-day money-back guarantee, and they're not finished. If you order now, you'll also get a 2-month supply of the legendary Deep Firming Serum. That's free. And if you call in the next 20 minutes, you get a 2-month supply of Esotique RF, Chamonix's most popular wrinkle cream. That, too, is free. That's your fourth gift. Call now, 800-SKIN-509, 800-SKIN-509, GenuCell.com. Double up on GenuCell, get the Deep Firming Serum and Esotique, all free while supplies last. And, of course, limited time, shipping also free, 800-SKIN-509, 800-SKIN-509. By the way, Tillerson, the Secretary of State, has weighed in and accused North Korea today of threatening the entire world. Of course, after Pyongyang fired their missile over Japan for the second time in a month in defiance of international pressure over their missile and nuclear program. And Tillerson, I just found out, too, that the Japanese ended up evacuating many major cities, but it got there in 17 minutes. And it was the longest flight. It flew right over Japan, again, about 2,300 miles. And the biggest question we now have as Americans, well, they've got the nukes because of Bill Clinton. No thank you for lectures, Hillary, as she did last night. And now they have the means of delivering them. This was an intermediate range nuclear, intermediate range missile. But if they, we now know they have ICBM technology and the missiles and, of course, the bombs, and then they can destroy us all. All right, we'll get to all of that. Roy Moore and Bo Dietl next, and much more coming up. Final hour, Hannity, straight ahead after this break.
He lied about repealing Obamacare. Now Mitch McConnell's D.C. slime machine spending millions spreading lies about Roy Moore, bearing false witness. Why? We know why. We all know why. Roy Moore's honest, and Moore's his own man. Moore fears God, stands for the Constitution, fights for what is right, and believes what we believe. Drain the swamp. Send McConnell a message. Send them all a message. Roy Moore, Senate.
My name's Roy Moore, and I approve this message.
All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. Two races we're going to follow this half hour. One is in the great state of Alabama, where Roy Moore is in a runoff against Luther Strange. And you just heard that latest ad from Roy Moore's campaign. And there also is a email that was sent out earlier today, and it said, "This week, my campaign exposed and blew one of Mitch McConnell's dirty tricks and schemes to steal the election for his puppet, Luther Strange, out of the water." And in typical fashion, Mitch McConnell and others were planning to use the September 21st debate between me and my opponent to sabotage and destroy my campaign. The debate was to be hosted by Samford University and the Alabama Policy Institute, but they didn't inform us that the president of the Policy Institute also serves as the treasurer of the Senate Leadership Fund, the same Senate Leadership Fund spending millions of dollars in Alabama attacking Roy Moore and his wife and his family with malicious ads. Roy Moore joins us now. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, Sean. How are you doing?
Well, I hope you're not mad at me. I supported Mo Brooks. I mean, Mo is a 28-year friend of mine. I've known him since my days down in Alabama, and he used to fill in for me on my show. It wasn't personal. I hope you understand.
Oh, I understand that, Sean.
I'm a very loyal friend. You know, this race in many ways has become a referendum on two people that don't live in Alabama. One is President Trump and one is Mitch McConnell. Do you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
Explain why you think it is.
Well, I mean, immediately upon me entering the race, they cut off all consultants, all pollsters, everybody that could help me outside the state and inside the state, and forced me to go on my own. Well, we did, and we're winning the race. We've been in the lead from the very beginning, despite the fact that they've spent approximately $15 million out of a couple funds in Washington, one the Senate Leadership Fund, the other run by Karl Rove, and they've put out negative ads. And
you're saying American Crossroads is involved in this?
Well, it's one of these. I think it's One Nation or another fund. But he's been on record on CNN as saying he supports what they're doing at the Senate Leadership Fund.
Let me ask you this, and this is an important issue for me. I am beyond angry and frustrated, as I know many of my friends in Alabama probably are too, over the fact that all these Republicans in the House and Senate, they promised everything. Repeal and replace Obamacare. They'd support a border wall. They'd support the president's tax plan. They support this and that. I want to know, and I want a firm pledge and promise from you on the things that you'll support. Do you support repealing and replacing? Did you support just the repeal? Where would you have voted, say, versus some of your Senate colleagues?
I support repeal completely. The reason is socialized medicine does not belong within the confines of the federal government. It is not under Article 1, Section 3, or Section 8, I'm sorry, Article 1, Section 8. It is something that the federal government will mess up, as it has Medicare, or as it has the VA hospitals. They can't run the VA hospitals. How would they run the medical system? Furthermore,
do you like the president's economic plan? Do you like the president's plan on the border? Do you like the president's energy plan? Is there anything you disagree with the president on that you can think of off the top of your head?
I agree with the president's agenda to get moving this country forward and stop illegal aliens flowing across our borders, to stop restrictions on the free enterprise system, and to stop repeal Obamacare. It's not very difficult to vote to repeal Obamacare. It didn't exist before Obama.
Who do you think you would most likely align yourself with in the Senate? Who are people that you look at in the Senate today that you say, you know what, they're doing a good job?
Probably Mike Lee.
Okay.
Being one of,
Ted Cruz?
Ted Cruz. The conservatives in the Senate.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, so why is Mitch McConnell so active in trying to stop you? You know, I thought that it was up to the people to decide. And by the way, he's got an 18% approval rate, and I'm more frustrated with him. There are 250 House bills, good bills like, you know, Kate's Law and other things, sanctuary cities laws that he hasn't even taken up in the Senate, and he hasn't even gotten some of the president's appointees through. Are you willing to stand up to Mitch McConnell?
Of course, and Mitch McConnell knows that. He said in CNN, talking the paragraph before and the paragraph after, he said, with a slim majority, we don't want another conservative rebel difficult to manage in the system. And that's exactly what he said.
Well, that's a reason to endorse you.
That's right.
There's the reason to endorse you right there. Do you believe, as I do, this, that he needs to go to 51 votes, a simple majority?
Absolutely. And I say that for a reason constitutionally, that it is not a supermajority imposed upon passing legislation by our founding fathers. What they've done is take a quote-unquote filibuster rule, which is not a filibuster rule, because filibuster is when you talk out of debate, when you can't even get the bill to the floor. It's not a filibuster rule. It's a rule to prevent passing legislation, and that's what the Senate is doing.
And you would only vote for a strict construction as for the court?
That's right. I would vote for a strict construction of the court. When courts start changing the meaning of the words, they change the whole intent of the object before them. For example, the First Amendment is a clear example where they change the word religion to mean whatever they want it to mean at any time. And when they do that, they change the whole purpose of the First Amendment, which was not to prohibit the acknowledgement of God, but to make sure that that acknowledgement was outside of government interference.
Let me ask you, because so many people know you from the Ten Commandments issue. What do you say to those people?
I'll say the Ten Commandments issue was all about the acknowledgement of God. Nothing in our Constitution or our law prohibits us from acknowledging a particular God. My goodness, one God, in God we trust. Look at the legislation that passed that, or the legislation that put under God in the pledge.
Our founding document said, you know,
right.
the Declaration
right.
talks about a superior being.
A creator being who gives us inalienable rights. When you deny that God, you deny who gives you your rights. And guess what government does? Takes them from you.
They take them from us. If I was in Alabama, I'd be voting for you, sir. I wish you all the best in less than 2 weeks. And I am not voting for anybody that Mitch McConnell is targeting ever in my life, ever. And I think what he's doing is unfair. I also believe you, I've known you over the years, as somebody that is a man of his word and integrity, and I want you to win this race.
Well, thank you, Sean. And if they'll go to roymoore.org, that's all they have to do, roymoore.org, it'll take them to the Senate site, and it'll take them to what I stand for and what I profess, roymoore.org. Now, appreciate you, sir.
Appreciate it. 800-941-SEAN is a number as we continue our look at the candidates today. I have a very dear friend that's running for mayor of New York City. And I will tell you that New York City is in a rapid, precipitous, dramatic decline since comrade Bill de Blasio has taken office. And you can't believe the things that are going on in the city. Bo Deedle now has gotten a top line and former detective, former Fox News contributor, and a friend of mine who I think, what did I tell you when you were running for office? I said, you're out of your mind. What are you doing? But
well,
I'm proud of you.
Tells me the same thing, Sean. First of all, you are probably the one great American that is out there, and I love you. I love your passion. I love the way you feel about this country. And regardless of anything, I'm running as an independent, but I love this country so much. I like to look at myself like a Ronald Reagan guy, because I met with Ronald Reagan back in 1986 in the Oval Office.
I saw the picture.
And what we got to do, you know what we got to do across this country? I do believe what Trump is trying to do. We got to have a lot of compromises, because if we don't have any kind of compromise, we're not going to get things done. And it's so important to get some of these issues done. We got to build that wall. We have to secure our borders. So, I mean, we got to give in to Schumer there and do a little something with this DREAM Act. Whatever we got to do, we got to get stuff passed. We got to get this the tax reform in there. And we have to go back and set up two committees for this medical insurance stuff and get committees from Republicans and Democrats and get something done. That's the biggest thing in this country. This is my problem in New York City. We got a mayor that talks about a 10-year plan with Rikers Island, 10-year plan with 90 homeless shelters, 10-year plan. Hey, you got to get things done today. How about a 10-month plan? We got homelessness reaching the roof. They're not dealing with it. You take the subways. Subways are breaking down. All this mayor wants to do is take money, pay for play. I'm running as an independent. Dump the mayor is the name of my line. And then, you know what? I need support from everyone, because this communist mayor we have now has eyes on running for the president of the United States. He thinks he's going to jump from here to get involved. He wants to be like that screwball from Vermont, there, that lunatic
Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
You know what, some of the things
that are bothering me? I mean, the city is dirtier than it's been. You have more crime than we've seen in many, many years. You've seen everything's dilapidated and falling down. When they try and fix something, they do it in the middle of the day. You can't get around anywhere in the city these days. You can't even get into the city, out of the city. You can't do it on weekends. You can't do it overnight. You can't do it ever.
You know, they put up these friggin' bike lanes. All of a sudden, you got a bike lane, you got a concrete thing, you got a truck double parked. What happens when someone has a heart attack? How do you get the ambulance there? My whole thing in New York City is we got to get things done. The police, all of a sudden, he's got all the statistics of crime being down. But I talk to people every day. You know what? They decriminalized a lot of the crimes. They're not reporting half the crap. And you know what, this mayor, when you get the police department, the New York City Police Department where I'm from, which I love more than anything, I would die for any other cop. I love the police department. 8 out of 10 cops said they would go for another job tomorrow from the New York City Police Department. Morale is at the lowest. They turned their backs on that this punk when we had that officer Familia shot, and then all of a sudden he got on a plane, he went to Germany to dance and do the Oompa Bar over there. We had a derailment, 200 people derailed. This guy thinks he's going to walk in. There's one guy he's afraid of, and I need the support of people from all over the country. Bo4mayor.com. They can send $10. I got to take this guy out because he is the beginning of what will take this country down again. We've got to destroy him at this battle because he's trying to go for the big war, and we got to take him out. He's a communist. He's a big supporter of the Cuban government with Fidel Castro. He was there with the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. You know what? I said during one of my debates, I challenge you. I tell you what I'll do. I'll give you 2 tickets, you and your wife, 1-way ticket back to Havana.
What did he say?
He doesn't want to deal with Bo. He saw me the other day. You know,
he's afraid of you.
He has to debate me on October 10th, and then he's going to debate me in November. He's told people he does not. He's trying to use some sort of a legal maneuver not to debate me. Because when I debate him, it's not going to be like that guy Sal Albanese. When he tells me, he starts with these numbers, I'm going to tell him, listen to me, now you just shut up. Because I don't like the guy personally. He's not a good person. All he cares about is pay-for-play money. He's a corrupt individual. He should have been indicted by the U.S. attorney, if not Cy Vance. And he's a bad guy.
All right, stay there, Bo. I got to take a break. We'll come back more with Bo Dietl. He's running for mayor of New York City. I want to talk to him specifically about, you know, the odds of winning this race and some of the other issues he wants to take down. Mayor de Blasio, the comrade, wants to take down a Christopher Columbus statue in Columbus Circle. And he's now set up a committee to examine every statue and every single thing that exists in the city, whether or not historically it's politically correct. We'll get into that when we get. All right, as we continue with Bo Dietl, candidate, independent for mayor in the city of New York. Bo, a longtime friend, former colleague, obviously, the Fox News Channel. Bo, I would love to see you win this race. I always said it was an uphill climb because in New York City, where you're running, I mean, Democrats outnumber Republicans about 9-1. It's very difficult for a Republican to win. But I want to ask you this. So the latest controversy with Comrade de Blasio is that he created this commission and they're talking about taking down the statue of Christopher Columbus in Columbus Circle. What is your reaction to that?
Well, you know, first right to the races, they did a Quinnipiac fact poll, and the poll that came out, it had me tied with the Republican that's running on the Republican line. And the thing is that the good part about this is 31% of the voters were undecided. They were against de Blasio. He got about 41%. So there is room for an upset. People do not like him. I'm looking to get the moderate and conservative Democrats that don't like de Blasio to come on board. And I think there's room for that. And I mean, look at this issue right now. He calls himself Italian. First of all, de Blasio's real name is Warren Wilhelm is his real name. He's German. He's not proud of it. I don't care the reasons why. But when they go and they try to take down a statue of an idol of the Italian Americans, I mean, it was the good and the bad, the ugly of history. But in reality, we look upon Christopher Columbus as someone that is an icon to the Italians. I mean, look, he didn't do good things. Sometimes he didn't do bad things. But you cannot change history. And those statues up there remind us of history. We're against slavery 100%. But during the time, what we should do then, Sean, is take down the pyramids in Egypt, because a lot of my Jewish brothers and sisters were slaughtered and were slaves to build those pyramids. Why don't we take those down next? Where do we stop? Let's be real. This is hyper-psychopathic actions
by the liberal left, and I can't stand it. And this thing has got to go.
All right, it's Bo, B-O-F-O-R, Mayor, if you want to help Bo Dietl out. Bo, we'll have you on. When is this debate? It's in October, right?
October 10th, I'm debating Big Bird the Blind.
Oh, my God. This is must-see TV. Thank you so much, Bo Dietl, Sean Hannity Show. All right, we'll take a quick break. News roundup, information overload. My buddy Harvey Levin from TMZ is up next, and then we'll get to your calls and also the latest on the terror attacks from earlier today. Straight ahead.
Objectify, the life stories of innovators, celebrities, and world leaders.
Do you encourage your kids to go into politics?
No. Told through cherished objects which have profound meaning.
My father, these were his glasses.
This was the sword that'd be used in Conan.
These superachievers show me, Harvey Levin, sometimes material things do matter.
This is one of my most prized possessions.
This is my doctorate of education.
Life stories like you've never seen. Objectified, premiering Sunday, September 17th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, only on Fox News Channel. Judge Judy, fiercely independent.
On your best day, you're not as smart as I am on my worst day.
But also old school.
You're a feminist?
I actually don't know what that means.
Her incredible life story, told through cherished objects.
My father, these were his glasses.
The twists and turns that almost derailed her and then made her a soaring success.
Do I want equal pay with men? Absolutely not.
A life story like you've never seen. Objectified premieres Sunday, September 17th on Fox News Channel, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific.
All right, news roundup, information overload hour, Sean Hannity Show. That is a promo of the latest news show on the Fox News Channel, and it's called Objectified, and it's hosted by Harvey Levin of TMZ fame, and he joins us now to talk about this and all the other issues of the day. You know what the show reminds me of? It reminds me of a modern day biography. I bet you're too young for this because I'm so much older than you. But do you remember early mornings, like on Saturday, Sunday morning, there was that show Biography with the really scary music and Mike Wallace was the host of it?
You know what's funny? I guess you really are older than me.
No, you know what? I'm still mad at you. You put Scaramucci in your spot instead of me. What's that about? What the hell was that?
Oh, my God. He came in this morning.
Yeah.
He is hysterical.
Isn't he? He's the greatest guy. Gosh. People think he's nuts. He's not. He's nuts in a fun way.
We were shooting a couple of promos because he's going to host the show on Monday, TMZ, and we shot a promo. So one of the guys as a gag said, hey, we got Steve Bannon out at Craig's last night. And he said, Craig's, and then he used the BS word and said, yeah, that guy goes to In-N-Out.
By the way, that's where I go. I land in L.A. and I race to an In-N-Out. I land in Vegas, same thing. I love In-N-Out Burger, animal style,
funny,
too.
Funny you say, by the way, because there is one right by the airport for that very reason for Sean Hannity.
Oh, God. I literally can't get there fast enough. Now that I'm fat and I'm old, I get it with lettuce and what I forget how you order it. I just tell them what I want. So if you were as old as me, you would have woken up to the scary music early mornings on a weekend, and it was Biography. But I love biographies. I love autobiographies.
My thing is, my whole adult life, I read biographies and autobiographies. And I wanted to do a show that, you know, would tell a life story, but the kind of life story where, you know, the people have layers to their life and twists and turns and failures and successes. And I thought, I don't want to do it just sitting on a sofa. So what we did was, we said to these, you know, to the people who we interviewed, you know, we're going to put your life into seven distinct chapters that represent different periods of your life or areas of your life. And each one of these periods or areas, we want you to find an object that you kept that represents that period or area. And it doesn't have to be anything expensive. It can be anything that's significant to you. And it's a different storytelling device that allows you to get into a story in a really intimate way where they feel they're more in control, they open up more, and it really works. And I'm telling you, the objects, I mean, one person, there was a rock that one person kept that is so significant. Tyler Perry, one of the most important things this guy's got, and he has got this lavish home and all this stuff, Walmart pajamas that his mom gave him that don't even fit. And there's a reason they're so important. So, you know, you get into their lives this way.
You know, it's funny. For a long time, I actually held a, you know, when you do go to an ATM and you get, like, your statement at the end of it, for a couple of years. I had like $200, which I think was the minimum at Old Stone Bank in Rhode Island. And that's all the money I had in the world. And I had found one years ago, and then I carried it forever because it meant a lot to me.
Exactly.
And, yeah, I mean, you know, but you did this in the interview. I thought you did the most interesting interview of Donald Trump that was not political, that brought us inside of who the guy is. And it's a person that I've known for a long time. And I thought it really was revealing. And one of you did use these techniques, and you walked around and you showed pictures of his father and him. And I remember thinking, what does this mean to you? And you got a lot out of him by doing it that way.
Yeah, and you know, it really, it's now tried and true, because I've done it. Look, I mean, I've done this with, you know, political figures. I did it with Benjamin Netanyahu. I did it with sports figures, Shaquille O'Neal, Hulk Hogan, Mark Cuban, who is kind of a hybrid, you know, because he's business too. Doing it with Martha Stewart, Tyler Perry in entertainment, Simon Cowell in entertainment, Judge Judy. So it works. It just works with everybody, because I think, you know, when they have to describe, you know, why is it that they kept something, like you could explain to me what it's like struggling with that statement, and that statement is probably, it triggers memories for you, and you know, something as simple as that is, you know, it's the linchpin.
You know, it's fascinating, because look, working in TMZ, you know people in the sports world, you know people in the political world, you know people in the entertainment world, so you're really in a really good position where you have access to all of these people. Do you find, as you interview them, and you've interviewed them for TMZ over the years, and it's one of my favorite shows because it reminds me a lot of Candid Camera, and you have all these celebrities, and I can't just not help but laugh at how they react to your cameras showing up and they're being stupid. Or they're sloppy drunk getting into the back of a car.
Yeah, but a lot of times they're really funny.
That all makes it funny. I'm telling you, I'm laughing. I'm crying half the time. And I do think celebrities, I don't think being a celebrity is healthy. I've said that. Nobody believes that I mean it. I do. I think they're, you know, the average people that work so hard every day, they don't get pat on the back and asking for pictures and autographs. And I just think it tends to get to people's heads. You've seen that over the years. And I just think that having access to them, if you notice one common characteristic as you look at people from all those different worlds.
Gosh, they're human beings. I mean, honestly, they're all fundamentally human beings, and it just doesn't matter. And, you know, a sports person can have the same insecurities and struggles that an entertainer, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't. They're all people who were kids at one time, who struggled at one time, who succeeded, who may have failed after succeeding. I mean, they are people. And what I find that's interesting is it's indistinguishable from area to area. I really mean it.
Do you think we spend way too much time over people's personal lives? Because it's like I don't really care what people do in their personal lives. And I say that, and then there's a big scandal with Bill Clinton, and I'm going to be following it day and night.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is nothing new. And the thing that I always think about, did you read a book called Summer of 27? It's a fantastic book.
No, I never read it.
Oh, it's fantastic. And it's all the things that happened in 1927, because that's when Lindbergh landed in Paris. But a lot of things. Babe Ruth broke the home run record. So there's a passage in this book where they talk about, there was an article, a weekly column, I think it was in the Chicago Tribune, and the column was only about Babe Ruth's bunions. Literally, just about
yeah.
Babe Ruth's bunions.
Yeah.
And it was the most popular part of the paper while they were running that. Everybody was really interested in it because they were interested in Babe Ruth. So
right. This
is not, John, a new phenomenon at all. This
you know what I've noticed, though, too? We never put any context. If somebody sins publicly, if I'll use that word, and public ridicule then descends upon them, and the cameras and the paparazzi and everybody's all over them. One thing I've noticed is nobody ever gives any context or texture to anybody's life. Now, maybe
I'll add one thing to that. I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. But I will add one thing to that, that the failing of the media in all media, you know, whether they cover politics or sports or general news or whatever it is that people now take snapshots of somebody's life and they say this event, this moment will forever define who they are.
Listen, would you want to be defined by your worst moment in life, things that nobody knows? I wouldn't.
But right, absolutely. And yet, I'm telling you, when you look at, you know, it's funny, I mean, this isn't the worst thing in the world, but I look at this thing with Kathy Griffin, with the head with Donald Trump. She held a news conference and she said, this is the end of my career. This is awful for me. Well, guess what? It's over. She's back on the road. And if anything, it probably boosted her a little bit. So, you know, when you look at that moment in time and everybody starts jumping and saying, well, this is going to define them forever, it almost never does.
You got to admit, never. Holding up, posing as an ISIS fighter with a bloodied head, severed head of the president is pretty stupid. It just
well,
is
yeah.
dumb.
But you know what? It's not going to define her. Bill Clinton. I mean, who would have thunk? Bill Clinton is the, you know, he is the poster child for the Democratic Party, beloved. You know, in 1997, there was a moment in time when you thought, oh my God, never. You know, it's like, it just never sticks this way. And you're right, people don't put context to it, and everybody tries to define the life with that one event, but it never sticks. It just never sticks that way.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back more with Harvey Levin of TMZ. He's got a new show. It's on the Fox News Channel. It debuts on Sunday at 8 o'clock, and it's called Objectified. All right, as we continue, Harvey Levin is with us. Got a brand new show debuting Sunday on the Fox News Channel, and it is called Objectified. And Harvey's been a friend for a long time, and he runs TMZ. I think it's one of the funniest shows on television today. Anthony Scaramucci is hosting on Monday. I'm extraordinarily jealous, although I don't think your staff of young people could deal with me there. I don't think that they'd be like, who's he? I never heard of this guy before.
They are never going to say who's he.
No, they'd say, who's that guy? Who, you know, where?
Yeah, they're not going to say that.
Why are you putting Grandpa in here? What's going on with that?
Believe me. You know what? You want to talk about Grandpa? I'm going to tell you a story. And it's embarrassing, but I'll tell you. So when I pitched this show, this Objectified show, I figured I need to explain it before I actually had shot anything. So I thought, I'll just bring an object in from my house, and I'll explain what the object is. So I had a globe of the world that I've kept since I was 6 years old, and it means something to me. There's all sorts of reasons why it means something to me. So I figured I'd bring the globe. So I pull it off the bookshelf, and I bring it to this pitch meeting, and I'm sitting down looking at the globe, and somebody looks at the United States, and they say, something's weird here. And we start looking at it, Sean.
Yeah.
It had 48 states.
Is that well, it's better than 52. It was an older globe. What do you want?
I know.
Let me ask you this question. So I guess you got a 12-week run to start. As I was saying, I love biographies. I can't watch enough of it. I'll tell you what my viewing habits are. I mostly watch Netflix. I mostly watch documentaries. I love biographies. I read biographies, and I read autobiographies. For example, I'm interviewing the president of Egypt on Monday for TV.
Oh, wow.
But I know one of the best autobiographies I ever read was Anwar Sadat's, and this guy was a genius.
A genius, and also, you know, one of the most extraordinary, you know, peacemakers, ultimately. I mean,
ultimately, he waited, and he waited, and he waited, and they called him a yes man for all these years, and he knew it, but he knew if he got a chance, he could make the world a better place, and he did, and he got killed for it. All right, real quick, so who are the people that you're going to be interviewing on the new show? I mean, it's a full hour, I assume, with everybody, right?
Yep. Judy starts, and then we're going to interview, I'll tell you, it's interesting, we interview Hulk Hogan, and he's never really talked about the Gawker trial before, and he really kind of gets into it with me on
that was a game changer.
It was a game changer, and it's interesting to know why he decided to open his life up, you know, with areas that he's certainly not proud of. We talked to, you know, Mark Cuban about, you know, one of the things I get into with him is politics. And Sean, I got to tell you, he was very open with me about whether he might run for office for president.
But he's very liberal. He texts me all the time and tells me how wrong I am, but I like the guy.
I like him a lot.
Yeah,
he's
a character.
Mark.
He's full of life. I love people that are alive.
And a smart guy. You know, Tyler Perry, Shaquille O'Neal, Simon Cowell.
I'm interested in Simon. He fascinates me.
Well, you know, Simon Cowell is the guy who decided, you know what? I can marry music and television and make something special. And he's the guy that did it. And, you know, and Simon Cowell, by the way, went flat broke when he was 30 years old. And a lot of people would have packed it in, and he didn't. So, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu, I mean, you know a lot about him.
Best friend. I've been friends with him for decades. I love him.
I got to tell you, it's so interesting to me how he became Americanized at school here, went back, but never wanted to go into politics. I mean, he had an aversion to politics.
Well, you know the story about his brother and the raid on Entebbe.
Course. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. And oh, by the way, he tells me about, you know, he was involved in the, with the Sabena Airlines hijacking where, you know, he, and I don't know if you've ever heard the story. Did he ever tell you the story?
Yes, he has.
Why there was a delay in charging the airplane?
I don't remember that part. So that's in the show. Don't tell me. I want to watch it.
All
right, listen, I got to roll, but Harvey obviously is, he debuts Sunday. It's 8 o'clock. It's on the Fox News Channel. It's called Objectified. And I can't believe Scaramucci is a trip. If you spend any time with him.
This is in your cry, isn't it?
He makes you cry and laugh and get mad at the same time. He's uncanny. He's great. All right,
thanks. Well, I will tell you this. John, I got to tell you, everybody I interviewed, I think, was 6'5 and over for Objectified. So it was great standing next to Scaramucci.
Yeah, I got it. I understand. Well, the guy you stand next to every night is tall.
I know. It drives me crazy.
Who cares? All right. Thanks so much, Harvey Levin, 800-941-SEAN on a Friday. We're going to lighten things up. Florida Georgia Line Friday concert series and your calls coming up straight ahead.
Everyone really thinks in D.C. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
This is still alive, by the way.
Oh, is that bag on fire?
I'm a few glasses.
Right, guys, let's get away and let's move right down the end of the platform. Let's get away.
I'm just going to say I didn't show it, obviously, for very obvious reasons, but I have just seen a woman who has just been there, the woman who was just stretched off here, and clearly her legs are wrapped up and she has been burned. She has burns to her face. She's conscious. She was taking some oxygen painkiller, pain relief as well. But clearly people have sustained very nasty burns. She seemed to have burns from all over her body, from top to toe, her legs wrapped up in some kind of protective sort of plastic film, and she definitely had burns to her face as well. So,
and no one seemed to be looking after the package or close to the package or owning this particular package or bag.
It was literally everyone ran off the tube. I mean, it was explosion. It was panic stations. Everyone ran off the tube. I just turned to see the tube, realised it was just that one explosion and the fire. There wasn't a continuation of the fire because my initial thought was the whole train's going to blow up.
Yes, of
whatever.
Course.
And when I come off it wasn't as serious as what I initially thought went through my head.
So and you, apparently people reporting that there were passengers with facial burns. Did you see any of that?
I mean, it's just been exposed to a very, very hot fireball for a matter of, a nanosecond.
Yeah, I tell you what, Peter, bloody lucky the doors are opening, otherwise it would have been a lot worse from what I can glean.
Definitely, because, it was so lucky that they were open because everyone just got off the tube. The evacuation was very quickly.
Everyone came running down the stairs and out of the door. Lots of people shocked and tearful and screaming and saying that there'd been an explosion. And then people were saying there'd been a wall of flame coming down a tube carriage. And I turned around and came back from the station with all of them.
And that is what they described, isn't it? A wall of flame.
A wall of flame coming down a carriage after a bang. And there were people at the back of the tube as well who said that they'd heard a bang quite clearly from further up the train. The doors had opened and everyone had started running. And a lot of people have been trying to climb over each other getting out of the tube.
I was just about to walk into the station and there were a few people sort of standing outside and there was a woman sitting on the pavement sort of with blood around her, and she was crying, and she was really hysterical. And I walked into the station, there was just blood on the floor, and people running down the stairs screaming, like, get out, people crying and running, and the whole station was evacuated. But people were coming out the station sort of covered in blood and dirt, and, yeah.
At this stage, we are treating the matter as a terrorist-related incident, and the Metropolitan Police Counter-Terrorism Command will take responsibility for that investigation. At this stage, it's a little early to draw any full conclusions as to what the circumstances and cause of that explosion are, and we are investigating and exploring that at the moment. We will give further information throughout the day, but for now, we just remind people to remain alert and report anything suspicious to the emergency services.
All right, some of the sounds from earlier today. If you haven't heard, an explosion on the tube train, which is the subway system in Great Britain at the height of rush hour earlier this morning, sends off a wall of fire through the entire carriage, injuring at least 20 people in what is a suspected terror attack. And you got, as I said, 20 people are injured in this attack. A homemade bucket bomb you have sending a fireball flying into a downtown train carriage amid these reports. And this just the one of many latest attacks. The attacker remains at large after the homemade bomb detonated. The suspect was identified by security services by some of the security camera footage that they have available. Well, I guess now I have an updated article. 22 people injured, suffering flash burns from the device with a timer. Others trampling as they were fleeing the subway on the District Line. I heard a boom. There were flames, one witness said. Everything we know so far about the Parsons Green attack. Anyway, so London once again under fire, under attack. There was also an incident in France where a knifeman was shouting Allah, attacking a soldier on patrol in Paris. Joining us now, Katie Hopkins with the Daily Mail and Kahim Rassam. He is the editor-in-chief. I'm sorry, Rahim Kassam is the editor-in-chief of Breitbart in London. And, of course, he has now written a brand new book, which has now become a bestseller. And we call the book, No-Go Zones, How Sharia Law is Coming to a Neighborhood Near You. Welcome both of you to the program. Thanks for being with us. Rahim, I was just talking to you yesterday. You were interviewing me, and here we are again because there's another attack in Europe, and it's everything that you and I have discussed at length about the migration problem, not vetting people, and not having assimilation in Europe, and it's all throughout Europe, and it's almost at least once a week now. It's ridiculous.
No assimilation, no demands of integration, and actually going the other way, Sean. As you say, the subtitle of my book is How Sharia Law is Coming to a Neighborhood Near You. Well, Theresa May is the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, and she is on the record as having said that Sharia can be of great benefit to the United Kingdom. What happens when you bow down towards Sharia supremacism, for those that don't know Islamic law, what happens when you bow down to it is they treat you like lessers. They think you're lessers anyway, by the way, as infidels, as unbelievers. They think you're lesser anyway. But then you start kowtowing to them. You start giving them what they want. Why? Because there's a latent threat. Sean, when they say to you, you can't insult all Muslims, they're not saying that out of compassion. They're saying that as a threat. There's a billion Muslims in the world. That has a threatening tone to it. What are you going to do when you insult all of us, when you make all of us angry? So the politicians, they say, okay, we won't make you angry. We'll embrace your Sharia. And then this happens. And it keeps happening. And it's the 39th terrorist attack or attempted terror attack in Europe this year alone. You mentioned there was another one in France, in Paris this morning. There was actually another one in Chalon-sur-Saône in eastern France that nobody's even talking about today alone, Sean.
It's just heartbreaking. I mean, in one sense, we heard in some of the audio that we just played, I mean, it was lucky that the doors had opened and they were at a particular stop. Katie Hopkins, but it's not surprising, and a controversy has emerged because Theresa May is apparently angry at Donald Trump because he sent out a tweet assuming it was what we now suspect it is, which is Islamic terror.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's what concerns me. You know, with all of this, I think we're kind of naturally tuned into the narrative that the media are pushing. So for a long time now, the narrative has been, we stand united, we are not divided, we carry on as normal. All of us can sing it from the song sheet because every politician comes out with it. The Eiffel Tower turns its lights on and off and on and off. But I would say that with this new narrative I'm hearing is more concerning to me. The first thing that was picked up on, the first thing that was used by Sky, by the BBC, was Trump's tweet. And all he said was another loser terrorist, more sick and demented people who were in the sights of Scotland Yard. I don't doubt for a moment that he
said terrorist.
Correct.
I mean, no, it had to be terrorism. Nobody's going to.
Of course, it's a terrorist. But what concerns me is the way they went straight to the Trump tweet, rather than talking about there was potentially two lunatics on the loose, one of whom had already detonated a bomb. And let's remember that bucket bomb didn't go off properly. It's 29, the latest yep. count on injured. So if that had gone off properly, these were kids on the school run, a 10-year-old with no skin left from his neck to his waistband. Sorry about the detail. And that bomb didn't go off. What they went straight to was Trump. And then we heard Theresa May
come out and say... But this is important. But Katie, he never said Islamic terrorism.
No,
he said terrorism.
But they used that line, Sean, and they went straight to, I will be meeting with Macron shortly to talk about extremism on the internet and extremists of all kind. And I know what that means. That means more purging of conservative supporting sites on YouTube and on Twitter. That will be more Trump supporters taken off of YouTube, taken off of Facebook. I see this messaging. I know where they're going, and they're going to use an attack on our underground to censor more Trump supporters on YouTube, and that can only be a bad thing.
So Great Britain is censoring Trump supporters on YouTube.
Absolutely. We've just seen the purge. You know, if you are on the... I think you've had lovely Joy Villa on your show, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
And so she was one of the accounts until we got on the back of it. They censored her for a while for being a Trump supporter. So we've seen them censoring conservative voices. And what they do is they try and, instead of talking about Islamic extremism or Islamist extremism, they talk about all extremists. And, of course, they target people from the right. And we are one of the first voices to be silenced because we're easy to find, we're easy to pick on. And also it keeps our government Sharia and Muslim compliant, and it does make you wonder where we're headed as a country or where we've gone.
Do people in Great Britain, do they care that there's separate Sharia courts? Is it, why is it not even an issue?
They care. We've just, people are losing their voice, they're losing their heart. And what of course the media don't pick up on is my children tonight watching the news, just 10 minutes ago watching the news and just going, well, there was a bomb, Mum, on the tube, on your tube. And my children see that, you know, my parents see that. People are saying they won't go to London, they're frightened. People in the UK are frightened. Whatever the politicians are saying, people don't want to go to London anymore. People are concerned, but they don't have the voice. And that's my real concern.
Well, I'll go to London, but I won't hang out with you because you're such a big target. And I don't mean to make light of it. I mean, it's a serious issue again. I mean, we're really,
well,
this could have been so much.
I mean, okay, hold on, Hannity. Hold it right there. I heard one of your earlier guests say to you, you were in fine shape. Now, I'm going to take issue with that because I've seen the size of you and you are not in fine shape. So your guest, Bo,
with all due respect,
there.
I actually am in really good shape. And I train hard. 90 minutes
Sean,
a day.
Sean loves his mixed martial arts.
I know, Raheem, but seriously, what's he weighing in at the moment?
Right now, I'm weighing in at 195, and it's all
okay,
muscle.
Fine. You do not tell me I'm a bigger target than you, because you are, frankly,
I didn't say
like
you're a bigger target. I didn't mean physically a bigger target. Yes. What's wrong with you?
Well, I'm a female, and I must take these things personally.
Well, you're the
time.
One that
if
gained 60 pounds on purpose and then lost it to show everybody how easy it is to diet.
You are the chubber.
This has got in a strange direction.
Right, clear. Anyway, Raheem, what's your sense of people in the UK? Do you think they're
Yeah, why don't you just take over the show? It's as if I have no questions for Raheem.
I over him.
It's great to be on the Katie Hopkins show here.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's
much.
Amazing.
Welcome to my show. I am slender and slim, and therefore I deserve this show. Chubster Hannity does not.
Are you really coming to the United States next week? Are you coming to New York City?
I'm back in the Big
God
Apple
help
next
us.
Week.
Wait a minute, I'm going to put it out an all-points bulletin that Katie Hopkins is back in the USA.
And guess what, Sean? Linda says she's shaving her legs above the knee.
She said you are or she
is? She is. She
said, your team, Lauren and Linda, they're going to shave their legs above the knee just to show me up. Because
yeah,
I'm
we have to look our best when we welcome people.
Why would that impact me at all in my life in any way, shape, matter, or form? Why would you tell me that?
I'm going to make you feel my hairy legs. I'm going to make you feel them, and you're going to love it.
Well, that's because we use Dollar Shave Club, Sean, so we were just telling her how smooth and silky our legs will be for our event when we go out.
You sent me one of your shaver kits, too, from one of your lovely advertisers, whom I love very much now.
Yeah, see, Dollar Shave Club. All right, can we get back
dollar
to some
shave,
serious
not
issues?
Dollar Shave.
All right, Raheem, can I just ask
Raheem,
you?
Shave, for God's sake,
I do not shave my legs.
Oh, good grief.
Here's the thing, Sean. Listen, the fact that we were so easily able to transition from talking about serious terrorist attack that happened this morning into joking around, that is proof of how normalized these events
are.
It's
only proof of how nuts Katie Hopkins is. That's all it is. It has nothing to do with you and me.
This stuff every day. That's the thing. And so it's become normal to her.
It's become normal to all of us.
It's become normal to everyone.
Just to get to a serious point, 9/11, the 16th anniversary, just passed this Monday. And I'm playing all the audio again and reminding people. And we put together a montage. And just every time I play it, I get chills. I mean, you watch the towers hit. You see it. You watch people jumping to their death. It makes you nauseous. I ran into a friend of mine the other night who is best friends with a woman who was married to a kid I went to high school with. And him and his brother died that day. His name was Farrell Lynch. His brother's name is Sean Lynch. They've been gone now 16 years. And Farrell Lynch, I think, had 5 kids. And I'm like, how's his wife doing? How are the kids doing? I mean, it's just heartbreaking. They live their lives with no father. It sucks.
It does suck. And I think in terms of normalizing where Raheem was just saying, we just had the BBC, you know, the taxpayer pays for those people. They just did an article on their website, the BBC website, which was called How Do You Put On Makeup After an Acid Attack? Can you imagine writing
How about
that
we don't
article?
Have acid attack? But anyway, we'll see you next week, Katie. Raheem, thank you so much for having me on your radio show yesterday. It was a pleasure
thank
to be
you.
There. And congratulations. I don't sleep well. Katie Hopkins keeps me up late at night. You know, her crazy jokes spinning through my mind. Quick break. Right back. We'll continue. All right. Hannity tonight, 10 Eastern. We are watching very, very closely what's happening in St. Louis. We'll have any new news if it develops. The city of London rocked by another terrorist attack today. We'll get into that. The controversy over the fact that the president said it was a terror attack when it was. And he didn't say Islamic terrorism. We'll get to that. Also more on DACA and Republican inaction. We'll hit that tonight. We have Dr. Gorka joining us. We'll check in with him. We have Judge Jeanine Pirro. We have Sarah Carter tonight. We have Matt Schlapp tonight. And Harvey Levin of TMZ. Set your DVR, Hannity, 10 Eastern, Fox News. And we'll see you back here on Monday. Have a great weekend. See you tonight at 10, back here Monday.